What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters. My name, of course, is still Paul Madotte. Thanks very much for joining me on this episode. I'm excited for this one. Today, I have Robert Guadalupe. He is sales expert extraordinaire coming to us from New York, Long Island. Robert, man, what's happening, buddy?
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Just the fact you said sales expert extraordinaire is I love that. Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to call myself going forward. I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me. Looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro, and then I'm looking forward to you sharing your story here.
Sure. Hi, everybody. Again, my name is Robert Guadalupe. I'm a sales leader. I've been in sales my entire career. I didn't start off that way. I was actually a textile designer in the very, very, very beginning. I graduated with a computer science major. I learned really quickly that's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to sit behind a desk and program the rest of my life. I was really good at it, but it just wasn't for me. My dad worked in IT in the textile industry. He got me into sales, and I've never turned back, and I'm here. I'm still here today.
Well, I'm looking forward to you getting into some details here. So with that said, you ready to roll?
I'm ready.
All right. So we're going back in time, Robert. That's what we do on this podcast. We're going back to the mid-90s. All right. Doesn't it feel like yesterday, 96? I mean, really?
Yeah. It does.
I mean, honestly. So you're at St. John's University. You touched on it, that you graduated with a BSc in computer science. Mm-hmm. And so do you recall, even before your first job, what your thoughts were, what you thought you'd be doing? Did you have a vision at the time?
Yeah, I think because my dad's been in IT his entire career, you know, one of the things growing up is, you know, you've got to somehow, you know, get a computer science degree, be a programmer, kind of work your way up, work for IBM, one of those larger software companies. Yeah, that's what I thought I was going to be doing the rest of my career. But that's not how it turned out. I'm glad it did not.
So did you actually pursue a career in that field at all?
Interesting. What I did was throughout school, throughout St. John's, I lived on my own. When I was about 18, I moved out on my own. You know, my dad said, yeah, you can live on your own, but you need to finish school. So I kind of did full-time work, full-time school. And I needed to make some extra cash. So because I was a programmer, what I learned to do is I hired a couple of my colleagues or my friends that were in school. I would get the programming jobs, and the customer would pay me, and I would give them half. So that's how I got into programming. So I built my own little business at 19 years old, which was a lot of fun.
And how long did you really give that a go?
I did it for about 4 years throughout my entire college career. Okay. I was very busy. If you can imagine, you know, work full-time during the day, school full-time at night, programming every weekend. I did that for about 4 years. I loved it, but you can't sustain that, right? As you get older, you need to find some time. But I did well. You know, my team did well, but it's not really what I wanted to do.
So what did you do after you graduated? What was next for you?
After I graduated, I started working in the industry, the textile industry, on the IT side. Again, as I said before, because I did it for 4 years, I did some programming jobs. I didn't want to do that. So I said to my dad, how do you get me into textiles? Because that's really what I want to learn. I don't want to sit down and do any programming. So he said, hey, look, if you want to get into textiles, fine. So I thought I was going to get a nice little cushy job in the office and do some textile design on whatever program it was. It didn't work out that way.
Not so much, no?
No, he sent me down to the plants in South Carolina, in the plants, where it was 200 degrees. And I did that for a little bit and really learn the background of what goes into supply chain and textiles, how to manufacture clothing and exporting and all that good stuff. So it was definitely the school of hard knocks for me, Paul, but you kind of had to go through that to get to where I am today.
And so where were you working?
I was working for a company called Marcus Brothers, where my dad was at. I was there for a number of years. But I was really working at the plants. You know, I didn't get the office job that I expected. My dad basically told the CEO, which was a family friend of ours, that, hey, let's give him a hard time. If he wants to learn the industry, let him go to the plants, you know, let him learn from the bottom up. I was traveling overseas at 19, 20, 21 years old, understanding manufacturing. I was working in the plants down south. When the plants were actually there, as you know, the plants are no longer around in the States. Yeah. Manufacturing isn't here. It was fun, but it was a lot of hard work. A lot of long days, a lot of long nights.
And so how long were you outside of New York?
I was outside of New York. I could have been outside of New York for, a month or two, depending on the size of the project. You know, if we were doing a project for a big retailer and I had an assistant putting a collection together, that's what we did, you know, scouting fabrics and manufacturing and suppliers. It was a big learning curve for me, but I loved it.
Okay. And so what was next for you?
After that, what I did was, you know, throughout that course of time, it was easy for me to identify that the market was kind of headed overseas, right? Because all the people that I've known growing up, through my dad and all his colleagues that were sales, you know, sales related people that were selling textiles, their orders were gigantic. But through the course of time, they were just becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. They were doing sample lots here, but really production was overseas. I had the opportunity to work for a textile supplier selling textiles, but not creating anymore. It was more about me having a bag of textiles and selling it to the market. I didn't really want to do that. So one day I was in, you're really bringing me back here. I was in Paris and I met this gentleman there who created a brand new SaaS platform where nobody spoke of SaaS. And he says, hey, look, I know you're familiar with textiles. You're a young guy. You've got a lot of energy. Take a look at this one product because I'd love to open up a New York office and start selling this platform. And this was at WGSN. This was back in like 2000, 2001. And we all know what happened during that course of time. So it was a very challenging year. But like you, I took a leap of faith and I got into technology. And that's how I got started in the industry.
So you worked for a company, did you say WGSN?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what do they do?
So WGSN was a very interesting company. There was nothing out there in the market.
Sounds like a TV network to me.
It's funny you say that. Many times I would call up and say, hey, I'm Robert from WGSN. And they're like, hey, are you a TV network or a radio network? I said, absolutely not. But, it's funny you say that. I actually remember calling my CEO in London. That's where the company was based out of. And he said, and I said to him, hey, is there a way we could say Worth Global Style Network instead? He said, absolutely not. It's too long of a word. When you leave a voicemail, they'll hang up as soon as you say, you know, global. No, it wasn't a radio station at all.
Okay. And so you're at WGSN, still in New York?
Still New York.
Okay, so still in New York. Okay, and so if I have your career, I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile as we're talking here, and I see so that you were a senior sales executive initially, and then you moved into leadership. Mm-hmm. Was that the intention, or did that just kind of happen? How did that happen? Because it's two very different roles.
No, I earned that. You know, it was a lot of hard work. I think I was the original core four sales executives that we just had in the very, very beginning. As you know, 2001 was a challenging year.
Yeah.
As I said before, SaaS, nobody ever heard of SaaS before. It was a platform that collected artificial intelligence, if you may, back then from all different parts of the world and put it on one platform. So, I was a top salesperson. I think that's what it was, quarter in, quarter out, quarter in, quarter out. So I wanted to run a team. It's something that I really wanted to do. I think I had a little management experience, you know, doing a thing in college. So I think I could do it. And they gave me a shot and it worked out for me.
Now, was it what you thought it was going to be, that type of a job? Because look, let's be honest, anybody who's listening, who's been a sales rep and a sales manager, VP sales leader, they know totally different jobs. I mean, like, they're not even close in terms of the skill sets needed or the day-to-day what you do. I mean, you know, when you're an individual contributor, you're on it. When you're a leader, you're dependent upon others to kind of lead, and you have to lead them. So what was that like for you?
Wow, that's a loaded question, and I don't think we have days to respond to that one. But it was night and day. You know, it was school of hard knocks. I really had to learn. You know, I was good at what I did. I was great at what I did as an individual. Once I got into managing 6, 7, or 8 people at the time, I don't think I slept for months. You know, because I'm a perfectionist. I wanted to get it right. And one thing I clearly remember learning back then that. It's obviously, as a sales manager, you go out there and you want to succeed, you want to meet forecasts. But to me, it was really more about listening to my team as individuals. And I learned to do that very early. I kind of put myself in their shoes because I was once there. So I kind of knew what a sales person needed, a sales executive needed. So I took those skills and I honed in on that. As a matter of fact, Paul, I mean, there was many times where there were salespeople that I coached that just shouldn't be in sales. So I kind of moved them into another role. But every day was different. Every day wasn't easy. Most days were very challenging. But we made it work. We made it work. I had a good team. And ultimately, I rebuilt the team. It was fantastic.
All in with WGSN. How many years were you there?
WGSN was an average of 7 years. But I shifted to a company called StyleSite, which was an acquisition. Okay. So that was kind of planned. So all in there, maybe 8, 9 years between those two companies.
Okay. So they take a shot on you. They give you an opportunity to lead. You turn the corner. You move into an acquisition company, the better part of 8 to 10, whatever how many years you're there. That's a long haul.
Yeah.
So the decision to move on, was it yours? Was it theirs? A little bit of both? And was that difficult?
It was absolutely difficult. Just to give you a little backstory, WGSN was the original of its kind. We did SaaS, collecting data, putting it on one platform. So any designer, merchandiser, buyer in retail and manufacturing, instead of traveling all over the world, capturing this information, it's on a platform. Right. So that's pretty exciting. We knew on the bat in the background, there was another company called StyleSite. They were faster. They were smaller. They were nimble. They were half the price and their technology blew us away. So because of that, what I did was I transferred over there knowing that they were going to be acquired. So it was kind of planned, but it wasn't easy. Right. Because I knew the future of what was going to happen, but I needed to understand what StealthLife did and kind of take that knowledge and mold it together with the acquisition.
So you, if I have this right, you technically quit WGSN, got hired by StyleSite, knowing there was a better than 50-50 chance that WGSN was going to acquire them?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Pretty much. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
And so, okay, so your tenure expires with StyleSite. How did that happen? Where'd you go next?
What I wanted to do was, because of the acquisition, it wasn't the same. You know, when companies get bought a few times, it's never the same company.
Yeah.
It evolves. It's a great company. It's still around today. I think they're still the leader. As a fact, I know they're the leader in the space. I'm fascinated by what they do, what they're doing, and what they continue to do. But it was more about the numbers and less about the product, right? As a sales manager and also as a sales executive, what I do know is if you're out there selling technology, it has to keep evolving, right? The numbers will come, but you have to keep evolving the product. So what I did was I moved into the smallest of the competitors called Fashion Snoops because I love the industry. I wanted to see what can I do with a smaller company and reach new heights, right? Because the company's been around for a long time. It's the smaller of the three, and it just wasn't getting any bigger. So the CEO there knew of me through the industry, so he gave me a shot. I was there for quite some time, and I turned that business around a little bit. It was a lot of fun as well.
When you joined Fashion Snoops, did you start as an individual contributor again, or did you transfer into a leadership role?
No, right into leadership. It was VP of sales and marketing. I've always done sales and marketing only because I know they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Right into leadership, rebuild the team, understand the product better, take a look at the clients we have, what else we need to go after. So it was a true management position.
You know, listen, there's a cliche out there that it says the grass isn't always greener on the other side. And so I'm not necessarily one way or the other, but was it greener for you? Was Fashion Soups what you thought it would be, this more nimble? Was it what you were looking for, or was it not?
I have to say, if I were to answer that pretty quickly, I don't think it was. And simply because it's a great business. It was the smallest of the companies in that space. And once I was in there, I kind of understood why, right? Mm. You know, some CEOs, some companies like to be at a certain level, let's say, you know, that $10 million range, and they're okay with that. You know, I'm a bit different. You know, if I'm at 5, I want to be at 10. If I'm at 10, I want to be at 20. If I'm at 20, I want to be at 50. And I think if the market's there, the product's there, the vision is there, the team is there, we can do it. It wasn't like that there. They were very comfortable where they were at. They're still around today. They're probably the same exact number than when I left them, and that's okay. But it wasn't for me. You know, I still need, if I see a runway there, I'd like to take advantage of it.
Robert, do you recall how quickly you came to that realization?
Probably day two.
Okay.
Probably day two. No, it was pretty quick. But my determination, I kept saying, you know, let's just give it a go. I think we could do some magic here. And we did. You know, the company did grow. It grew a little slower than I'd like to, than I'm used to. So there was some growth, but there was certainly a cap on that.
Well, I know you stayed there for about 4 years, so there must have been something that was working.
Yeah.
If you learned pretty quickly that you're going to have a ceiling here, that you accomplished some stuff over the 4 years. So congrats for that. And so after almost 4 years at Fashion Snoops, you're still in New York, right? The greater New York area. Okay. So you're still in New York, still on Long Island?
Still on Long Island. Yeah. I've been here for about 16 years now. Yeah.
And so, okay. So we're right around when? 2015, 2016 now? Where are we at?
Yeah. More around that. Yeah.
Okay.
You're making me go back a little bit, but yeah, about that time.
It's not that long ago, Robert. Come on, man. Stay with me here. All right. All right. So 2016, this is your story, man. This is your story. Okay.
Yeah. It's 2016.
All right. So 2016. That. Okay. So you're at Fashion Snoops. Where'd you go next?
After that, I said to myself, I need to get out of trend forecasting. It's keep in mind, because I was a textile designer.
Yeah.
So in that world, you're around retailers and manufacturers. And then what I did was I went over the retail technology side. So I was speaking with all the same people. So it wasn't that difficult for me, but obviously there were some bumps in the road that we just talked about. But I didn't want to do that anymore, right? I wanted to do something a bit different. I'm a big believer in mentors. I've got about three mentors that I constantly talk to, maybe once a quarter. In fact, I was on the phone with one of them before. And all three of them said to me, hey, try a startup for the very first time if you can. So what I did was I worked for a startup. It's a Multimedia Plus. It was an LMS solution. So they did some e-learning apps for retailers and manufacturers again. So it made sense for me. And it was great. It was great 3 years.
Now, so the decision to try a startup is interesting to me because, I mean, I started up my own business, so I know what it's like actually starting the company, but I don't know what it's like to actually join an organization kind of on the at the early stages or the early phases. I mean, I worked at Xerox for a decade, and believe me, when I joined Xerox, they were anything but a startup, so that's all
right.
New. And so the startup experience, overwhelming for you? Was it mentally tough? Did it take you a while to make that decision? Or what was it like to say, okay, yeah, let's give this a shot here?
I gave it a shot simply because I think at the end of the day, you got to keep to the theme is retail and manufacturing and me working so closely prior to the startup. One thing I did know is one of the challenges retail still has today, is that we're not training our associates on the floor, right? We do all these great things in supply chain and there's a billion things that get done before actual product gets into the store. Now, once product gets into the store, nobody's training the associates. So the associates kind of just walking around and trying to help you as best they can.
Right.
Except if you go to Best Buy, and Best Buy kind of knows everything about that product. So I really wanted to do that because I know that's a challenge for retail. So I worked for a startup that built, as I said, apps for learning, e-learning for the students on four. There were other bigger companies that did what we did. So for me, it was a challenge because we were smaller, but we had a niche product. We had a patent where you can utilize our app anywhere with minimal Wi-Fi when nobody had that. So that was a lot of fun. We were able to open up the market pretty fast.
Okay. And so is that organization still around? Did they get acquired by somebody? What happened there?
They're still around. They're still small. As I said before, they had a patent. I was there about 3 years. In the second year and a few months, we lost our patent. And right away for me, that was the handwriting in the wall that something's going to change. And it did. Clearly, maybe 6 months after, we lost our biggest client, which probably about 40% of our business.
That's pretty big.
Exactly. So that's another thing, Paul. When you work for a startup, you're just happy to grab clients, right? We probably had a dozen clients at that time, which is a great number. When I got there, it was probably half of that. So we kept acquiring. These are very big, complex enterprise solutions. So it's not a transactional business, right? But when you lose 40% of your revenue, it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
It hurts. It hurts big time.
And so you decided to change, I guess, or did they move on from you? What happened in terms of why you left?
Yeah, I think it was clear on both sides. They wanted me to stay and kind of try to rebuild it. But I knew without that patent, it was close to impossible. And it was never going to be that growth. I've been very, very, very lucky being in textile design and technology. I got a call from Lectra. So I started working for them right after that. And I was with them for about 1.5 years.
Okay. And so that takes us up until like just this year.
Yeah.
And so I want to chat with you about 2020. Anybody who's listening knows it's just not the year we thought it was going to be. There are some companies and some individuals who have flourished this year. They have a really compelling value prop, and it's actually been good for them what's happened in the world financially and from a market share standpoint. But all of us individually, it's been challenging. I mean, I mentioned to you, my wife's a nurse, and we've had to deal with social distancing in the house and what's happening with her. And we have two small kids. And then my business had to pivot all the way to all virtual 100%. And that was a challenge. And so you're not at Lectra anymore. And so are you a victim of 2020?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I get that question a lot. I don't think initially when it first happened, when we first kind of parted ways at Lectra, I thought I was a victim. But at the end of the day, what I've learned in these 3 months, 3.5 months, is that family-wise, there's a lot of family stuff that I've missed for years. I'm always on a plane, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of learned that. I kind of appreciate that a lot more than I ever have been. But also it gave me the opportunity, as big as my network is, I've made it a lot bigger these last 3 months, and I'm learning so much about my skills that I'll get crossover into many different industries. If I was still at Lectra, I would just still be doing that and doing a good job with that. But because of all this, I'm able to open up and see other avenues that I never would have seen before. So I don't think I was a victim. I think it'll work out for me ultimately.
You know, the comment regarding able to expand your network over the last 3 or 4 month period, how have you done that? Because I'm sure there's more than a few people listening who might have been impacted from a job perspective as well as a result of COVID, furloughing, downsizing, laid off, et cetera. So what have you done to expand your network in this time to kind of turn this into, what's on the horizon for me? What's next?
Yeah, a bunch of different things. I'm a big believer in LinkedIn. I'm on it constantly, all the time. I'm always sending blind emails, introducing myself. If somebody knows somebody I know, then I make the introduction, because you never, ever know. Because I've been a sales manager for quite some time, I'm not afraid to go to the C-suite and introduce myself. If there's an article on any, I'm a big reader. I probably spend an hour reading every morning. If there's a name I don't know, you know, an email's going out on LinkedIn, I'm introducing myself. Do they reply all the time? Absolutely not. But that's not the intention, right? It's just I'm looking to network. And it works. People do respond. And I got to tell you one more thing that I want to tell everybody that's listening. Cold calling is tough. Everybody knows cold calling is tough. And it is. It'll never be an easy thing. But more and more and more people are answering the phone now. And I take full advantage of that. They got nowhere else to go. You know, they're home.
Yeah.
So I pick up the phone as much as I can.
Good. Well, anybody listening, if they've been through SOAR with me, they would know that people pick up if you just make the call, right? And if you have enough presence.
Yeah. Pick up that phone. Don't give up.
Robert, man, this is quite the ride you've had, man, from computer science to quickly realizing, now that isn't really for me, into textiles, into startup, and then, you know, Electra and leadership and figured it out. And then, of course, 2020 comes along. And now, you know, you can look at it, you can go, well, this sucks and I'm the victim here and, you know, look at me and et cetera, et cetera. But then it sounds like you've got a pretty good mindset here of, okay, so it's happened. How do I turn lemons into lemonade? And how do I figure this out, right? Because maybe the next big thing is on the horizon for you because you've crushed it everywhere else that you've been. So the next one will happen as well. It's just a matter of what that time will be. So I dig your mindset, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, it's all about mindset. Don't get me wrong, Paul. In the first week or so right after it all transpired, I'm going, you know, what happened?
Yeah.
What went wrong? You know, how can something like this plague affect the entire planet? It just didn't make any sense. So I kind of just was thinking. But after that week, I said to myself, it's all about mindset. You know, I coach, you know, I train people. I talk to salespeople every day. If my mindset is wrong, then how can I coach anybody?
Yeah. I love it. Robert, last question I have for you here.
Sure.
I always like to ask anybody who is a guest on any feedback, advice, guidance, something that's maybe served you well as a bit of a foundation. Would there be anything that you would, you know, like to pay it forward with, that this has worked for you?
Yeah, you know what? There's many things, but there is one. I do want to read a note that I'm always on webinars. You know, if there's a webinar, I log in and I listen to it, especially if it's from a major CEO, from a retailer or manufacturer. I'm on, right?
Yeah.
There was one yesterday from, I think it was retail. I forget what the source was. It was the CEO, John Furner, of Walmart. He said something that really struck a nerve for me. So what I want to say to anybody that's out there listening in sales, he said loyalty in retail, and retail, you can substitute that for anything, right? Loyalty in retail is the absence of something better, right? And
loyalty
in
retail is the absence of something better. Interesting.
So to me, I read it a few times and I'm thinking about it and I'm saying to myself, this could go into any industry. At the end of the day, if you're in sales and you've got a service or a technology, whatever you have, you got to pick up the phone, you got to be out there and people will listen. People will become a client. People will be loyal to them if it replaces something that's missing or if it substitutes something that's missing. I thought that was great. And this is a gentleman, as I said, the CEO of Walmart, who started as an hourly worker, which I admire people like that. You kind of work your way up. And now he's, you know, the CEO of one of the largest retailer
in the world,
physical retailer in the planet. So I think that's awesome.
Robert, man, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Of course, man. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome.
Pick up the phone, guys. It's all you need to do.
All right, everybody. On that note, remember, we'll wrap this one up right now because why? Your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. Be safe, everybody. Oh,